Hello and welcome to SEV Live. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the @JuniorMiningGuy on Twitter and also the CEO of the SOAR Financial Group. Really appreciate you joining us for this really special episode. We have a very special guest. We had him on before and I'm really happy to have him back. I think it's quite timely with what is going on. It's David Morgan. He is the silver guru and we have a few topics prepared. I think I'm really excited to this conversation because we're going to talk about the biggest reset. We're going to walk through it like... And what I'm interested in is, like, how is it all going to play out and who will stand winning and what's his, like, for lack of a better term, his dream scenario, how this will all play out. It's a bit, how do you call it, morbid humor, a bit dark humor if you call it dream scenario, I think, but we'll see where it goes. And, of course, how is silver going to play a role in all of this? Really curious to hear the silver guru explain his views on that, obviously. Before I switch over to my guest, of course, please be reminded to follow us on YouTube, follow us on Twitter, hit that like and subscribe button, and leave a comment. What do you think what the end game would look like? What is your scenario for the biggest reset, and how do you think it will play out? Really love to hear from you. And I think I've said my piece. I'm really looking forward now to the conversation with David. David, thanks so much for joining us again. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Kai.
Yeah. How's your summer been? I know the markets have been awful.
Yeah. A bit trying, you might say, with the markets, but overall good. I haven't got enough kayaking in, but outside of that, I've had a pretty balanced summer, you know, fun with work and not really much I could complain.
No, absolutely. It is tough. We can't really change it. Whatever we say here, like, usually doesn't change markets, unfortunately, as much as we wanted to. But David, let's dive right in. As I said, we're titling this video "Explained the Biggest Reset in History." I think it's a bit of an umbrella topic because we can fit everything in it. Mm-hmm. And I gave you a bit of a heads up what I'm sort of looking for in the conversation. It is really like, how do you see it playing out? But before we talk about the future and what will happen next, I think we got to draw a bit of a picture of like where we're at right now. You're in the U.S., obviously. Like, how is it looking? Where are the markets?
Well, they're in an uncertainty mode. I mean, you've got the stock market that, in my view, is a bear market trap, bear market rally. You can get a 17, 18, 20% move up from a recent low and convinces the bulls they're right and convinces the bears they're wrong. And all of a sudden it peaks and starts down again. That's the way I see it. I think we're going to see a lower stock market by the end of October of this year, but you know, I could be wrong. As far as the metals go, I think that we probably hit the bottom for the recent time frame. I said 1850 would probably be the bottom in silver. So far, we've gotten close to testing it. It's come up. It's coming up today. One day doesn't make a market. I think that's it. There's a strong seasonality on midterm election years for gold. And basically it dips in July and goes up the rest of the year, but doesn't mean trend line is going up. But all markets fluctuate. So around that trend line, it goes up, down, up, down, up, down. But every time it comes down, it's a higher low than the previous one. And so far, silver's pattern is that. So I think we're looking at the metals doing better by the end of the year, the stock market looking worse by the end of the year. And the bond market's a hard call, but based on the interest rate moves, the Fed rhetoric, the tapering, the change of the balance sheet, the real estate market, which is a pretty good indicator of what interest rates really mean, I think all those factors combined lead to one of the best places to be currently is to switch out of equities and bonds and real estate and into the metals. And of course, very few people see that at the present time. And yet that shift is taking place in some of what's called the smarter money.
Yeah, interesting times indeed. And this week, the Fed is meeting in Jackson Hole. They're meeting in Wyoming. How do you put the Fed into play in all this? It seems like it's a welcome excuse for everybody in the market right now. Oh, let's wait what the Fed is doing. But are they really that important? And what do you expect them to do actually in the coming weeks and months?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been to Jackson. I've never been to the Fed meeting, but it's a beautiful area.
I've been there as well, actually. I've driven through it. Gorgeous area, just outside of Teton there as well. Beautiful.
It's kind of ironic in a way that something with the Grand Tetons and all that is, you know, where these Fed characters can have their annual meetings or their prime meeting. Anyway, I don't think the Fed's as important as most, but, you know, that's a subjective opinion. Certainly, they're becoming more and more powerless to control the economy. Yes, they're important, and yes, they basically have a handle on interest rates. But remember, it's the Fed funds rate that they really control. In a more of a free market, you'd see the interest rates be changed due to market forces, which they are, but not nearly to the degree that I witnessed when, you know, in the 1970s. But nonetheless, and then the repo market, I mean, it's huge. I mean, it's what, over a $1 trillion market. And these overnight loans, I mean, you've got these huge corps with this, you know, huge balance sheets of cash, pure cash, like, you know, Apple or one of these huge companies. And so, you know, basically they don't have a superior position to a normal depositor. I mean, it's an unsecured credit to the bank. And so they have to park it and get a security, which is a treasury bill bond note of some type that's guaranteed. Well, what's it guaranteed? It's guaranteed to print the money and give it to you. But regardless of my opinion or that fact, the cash holders feel more secure loaning overnight. So it's just so much distortion in the market. It's gotten to a point where it's really hard to forecast which way it will bend, up or down, but it's bending and it will snap at some point. And that's kind of what we're witnessing. We're seeing, again, uncertainty throughout the sector, all sector, the markets, all markets. And because of that, money can shift very rapidly from one arena to another. And foreign exchange, for example, right now the dollar is the kingpin, as you would expect. I expect the dollar to be the strongest currency until it isn't. And when it isn't, what is? And the answer is gold. Gold will be the strongest, if you want to call it a currency, or the strongest money. But we're a ways away from that right now. But the direction is clear, the trend is clear. And once a lot of these derivatives, interest rate swaps, repo loans, leveraged real estate, and the deleveraging of the system continues, we'll see more and more of a liquidity squeeze, which means more and more of a run to the U.S. dollar.
U.S. dollars is a really interesting topic. Like, it is the world reserve currency, but when does the system fall apart? And like, will the U.S. actually allow the U.S. dollar to collapse at some point? And what are some of the methods for that to prevent it?
Well, to prevent it, you basically allow the free market to put the interest rates where they are, where people trust the dollar in the future. So, I mean, basically a repeat of what Volcker did in 1980. But I don't think you could do that this time because we don't have the same balance sheet in the United States that we had in 1980. So it's impossible to put interest rates at that level without crashing the entire system. So they're really stuck. But until that takes place, or the opposite, where they cave in and say, we got to lower interest rates, we can't take the pain anymore. Well, at that point, just about everybody's caught on in the game. And what's the game? That you're never going to pay back this debt, which means that this money is going to become worth less and worth less, and it'll eventually be worthless. And at that point, you're going to see probably a run out of dollars and into gold and other assets, of course, any hard asset. I mean, a bunch of oil or lumber or, you know, agricultural commodities. Problem with all the other sectors in the hard asset market, primarily real estate may be somewhat of an exception, is longevity. I mean, you know, it's hard to store a bunch of oil or lumber or whatever, whereas gold, you can put a large amount of value in a very limited amount of space, and it lasts basically forever.
It reminds me, people got to call when oil dipped to below $0, dipped to, I think, to minus 40, and all of a sudden the traders got the calls like, where do you want your oil? Right? It's kind of tough to do that. Like, even as a private speculator, it's like, yeah, just put it in the garage. I don't think that that really works, right? It's interesting. Like, we live in an echo chamber, obviously. I'm in the same camp as you are. I'm a gold and silver. I wouldn't call myself a gold and silver buck, but I obviously wanted to do the precious metals to do really well because I obviously financially benefit from it. So I'm always looking for cracks in the system, right? And we briefly talked about the Fed, and the inflation rate obviously is a big part of like how the Fed decides whether to raise or lower interest rates. What are you looking for, and what do you make of the inflation rate right now? Like, is it transitory? Like, and how does it factor into everything?
Well, having been through, one pretty significant inflation from the time I started officially in the workforce with, getting out of college, watching it go all the way to the Volcker years, and then it tapered off rapidly, and basically you had a dead market in gold for 20 years. So I've lived through all of that. And in those days, inflation didn't go up every month, although near the end it did, but it ebbed and flowed. It was high and a little lower, and then higher and a little lower. But we're seeing the same thing right now. I don't think the inflation monster could be killed very easily. I don't think it's transitory. I think it's kind of built in. And you could argue why. I mean, part of it's supply. I mean, if you believe in supply and demand as a basic economic force, then you have less supply and equal or greater demand, prices are forced higher. And then you've got what's called the price wage spiral, where people say, I've got to have more money, boss, because I can't come to work unless you give me more. I've got gas is now $5 a gallon, and my food budget's 40% more, and my rent payment went up. So if you can't pay me more, I can't work for you. So that pushes wages higher, and that in turn spirals into prices going higher again. So you get into this wage price spiral, it's called. So I think all of that is ahead of us, unfortunately. And of course, the end of it is, what Sir Isaac Newton did with the Bank of England so many years ago, and he put him back on a gold standard. Will that happen or not? We can discuss it. You want to get my opinion on, what this reset actually looks like and what my preferred outcome would be. And I'm very happy to discuss that.
Now, let's definitely do that. Now, let's talk about your dream scenario, for a lack of a better term, of how this all plays out. And maybe we start by looking for the cracks. Like, what are some of the things you're looking for? I mentioned briefly before we started recording here, is U.S. home sales dropped, right? Massively, more than expected. That's definitely a crack in the system for me, where we're seeing new home buyers are just disappearing because interest rates, mortgage rates are too high. What are some of the other cracks you're looking for, and maybe something you maybe a website or so you open in the morning that you're looking for, maybe some treasury bond yield spreads that you're looking for as well? I'm really curious, what's a crack in the system for you, and how do you identify it?
Well, the bond market's something I have, more or less preached about from time to time, that, it's the keys to the kingdom. The debt credit markets, it's how the whole system functions. And when that starts to break down, or trust in it starts to break down, you're at the beginning of the end. I think we peaked in January of this year. I think that's it. I think the bond market, after 40 years of being kind of the place to be, is finally the place not to be. But it isn't a mass run to the exit. A few people that are so enamored with how well they've done the bond market will probably hold too long. So that's one of the keys I look at. Another one is just the overall take, and this is subjective, of where we are in this great reset. One of the things that takes place at a top is that everyone, almost everyone, is convinced when we are topping that it can only go higher. And let's look at that from a governmental control perspective. This is all opinion, folks. You don't have to agree with me, but I'm being interviewed. So if you look at the WEF and what we've learned from the World Economic Forum and Klaus Schwab and his minions, a lot of leak has leaked out. This, I forget the exact term, Kai, you might help me out, but the world leader, the world leader system, where you have a Trudeau and a lot of these, other world leaders that basically were educated by the WEF. So when that leaks out, it wakes a lot of people up. Like, wait a minute, is this a free system where we elect our leaders, or are they selected by the World Economic Forum? Well, the answer is, for the most part, in my opinion, is a lot of them are selected by the World Economic Forum. Well, that looks in one perspective like they've got more and more and more control. But now that we know what the truth could or should set you free. So now we start to question our leadership. The whole thing's based on trust. And if we don't trust the currency, we can have a breakdown. If we don't trust the leadership, we can have a breakdown. And normally in these resets, you see a breakdown of trust in government. You know, you look at the French Revolution as one example, it was the trust of government. I mean, the Roman Empire, you could say, was a trust of government. I mean, at the end, the senators were, you know, had all the goodies and the populace had very little, and basically Rome burned. I mean, that's a very short story. So I think you're going to see, one other real important thought, several, but this one especially, and that is John Tanner's book, The Collapse of Complex Societies. And his main argument, or the way I read it, is the more complicated something is, the more points of failure you can have. And so the more complicated a society is, the more points of failure. I mean, look at the supply chain. Look at how many times a kernel of wheat goes from, you know, the farmland, transportation, grinder, baker, transportation, you know, all that. So it's very complex, even to bake a loaf of bread and put it on your store shelf. The WEF's vision is a more complex structure, not a lower, not a simpler one. Everyone's going to have be remolded into a certain way of thinking. They'll be re-educated. This is, again, my opinion. This is kind of reading it sub rosa because I don't want to say too much and not be able to post this on YouTube. So bear with me, people. You either understand my metaphors or not. But the idea being that, you know, you might have a certain tattoo or whatever before you can do normal activities. You might have to have a certain procedure before you can do certain activities. And so this becomes more and more complicated because you need to be able to track and trace those things. You talk about the central bank digital currencies, which is obviously what they want. And again, that's a more complex system because there's got to be some way to identify you as you, which is the real ID. That's what that's all about. It's not about, you know, your security and your safety and someone seeing your identity. It's about them taxing, tracing everything you think, do, and say. So this adds to complexity. Well, when you get an overly complicated system with many points of failure, what happens is you go to a more simpler system. And that's what I envision. I mean, there's a gentleman named Leo Zagami that talks about, and if I plug his latest book, I don't recall the name of it, but, you know, it's not going to be the Great Reset. It's going to be the Great Reject. And I agree with him that a lot of people will reject it because, one, they don't agree with it philosophically. They'd rather be free than controlled. That's part of it. The other part of it is the inability of a complex system to mandate something that vast on a worldwide basis. I mean, it's very, very difficult. Just look at the amount of unbanked people on the planet right now. I think it's somewhere around 2 billion. I'd have to look it up to be sure. Out of, you know, roughly 8 billion. I mean, that's a lot of people that don't even have a bank account. And the World Economic Forum wants everybody to be, for lack of a better term, tattooed so that they can recognize who they are, where they are, what they own, what they bought, how they bought it, what their carbon footprint is, how many calories they ate, and how many they're allotted. So that's a complex society getting more complex. I see it failing. My dream is that my basic premise for years has been that money is power and that elites have the money. They own the gold, they make the rules, and they have the power. A lot of people could be bought. And if we, the people, have the power, have the money, then we can take back our rightful place of, you know, being free, basic human rights, of being able to determine our own destiny. Of course, that takes self-responsibility as well. So you will have both. I mean, there will be smart cities in the 5 and 6G and, you know, people that conform, people that actually want it. People want to be enhanced or, adapted to the new system. And then there'll be those like in the Hunger Games that are like out on the periphery that maybe are trying to be controlled, but are less controlled or basically opt out entirely. So, again, things get this complicated, start breaking down. It goes to a simpler method. If you go to James Howard Cutler's I think it's World by Hand or Something by Hand. He talks about how things will go from globalism to local communities. I think that's actually more likely, even though at the peak, most people are convinced it's only going higher. So it's very difficult to call tops. I've been pretty good at it in the metals, and hopefully I'm going to be good at it here, where so many are convinced we have no resistance or very little, and there's not much you can do about it. And unfortunately, that's what I see in the future, blah, 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 blah. First of all, recognizing how much control this WEF has really had in our lives, but it's been exposed. And now that it's been exposed, I think it's the top. I think they're on the way down. Not they're out, not that they're going to go away, but their plans are just that, plans. They will not be implemented to the level they think. And I think we can get a handle on the money through, let's say, cryptocurrencies backed digitally, or, you know, real metal backed digitally, and various forms. I'm all for a competition in the monetary realm. I mean, you have other competing currencies that are run by the people rather than the banks, where you could have settlement peer-to-peer and you don't need that third party, that broker or that bank, where we can just do our own trading. That's very optimistic and idealistic, I realize. But nonetheless, put at least a lot more of the power back to people for the monetary realm. That's where we really have a say. I mean, the old idea that you vote with your dollars is a very solid one. If, take any example you want, and there's been few in my lifetime where people have boycotted certain gas stations, for example. They said, you know, the hell with Shell, and quit buying gas at Shell. Enough people did it where it did impact Shell. So those things can take place.
Like, how do you see then transition happening? Like, and I think that's the big question mark for me as well. I think we all see it heading a certain direction, but like, is there going to be one big bang, or do you see a transition happening slowly? Because for me, there needs to be a trigger, in my opinion, right? That will trigger the whole transition to a new monetary system to a degree, to the biggest reset in history, right? I don't think it'll happen peacefully, personally, unfortunately. Like, I wish I had another opinion, but that's where I see things heading. That's where we're spiraling to. But like, how do you see that happening? Like, do you see it as a transition? Is it transitory? not transitory, but it's like, I tried to squeeze that word in. But is it a transition, or will we have one big bank, one big reset within, let's say, 6 months, and then we're off to the next one?
Oh, both. It'll be chipping away, where there's more and more distrust of government. There's more rhetoric from the, let's say, the people up speaking truth to power. And that's already in place. It continues, and this trend is strengthening. And then, as you say, and I agree, at some point, there'll be kind of this cutoff. And that will be, for an example, I don't know the future, where in order to buy groceries, again, this is a metaphor, this is an analogy, but in order to buy groceries, you need to take this ID. If you don't have this ID, you can't go to the grocery store. So now you're going to get to where, you know, Leo Zadami and others have said, what do people do? And some will say, well, I'm growing my own food, the hell with you, I'm not going to sign that. There'll be some that will, obviously. And that's kind of that point that you're referring to. So is it to buy food? Is it for medical treatment? Is it for keeping your pension plan? Is it for collecting your Social Security? Is it for, let's think of a country like in South America, would it be for ability to transport stuff on a given road, when there's toll roads? I mean, you could put in many ideas where the control is based on your conformity, and the amount that won't conform, that's the kind of that day. It's like, well, I remember the day that we had to change our bank account from the current one to an all digital system and get a new card for our bank account. I remember that day. And
it was peaceful, though.
Well, it could be, and it may not be. I mean, it depends, you know, where it is and how awake the population is and what their proclivities are. I mean, if you have people like a bunch of libertarians in a certain small town, and their bank, you know, says you got to do this, and it's a small town bank, maybe the banker will say, I don't want to do this. But just because they don't want to do it doesn't mean it can't be implemented. And once you have these controls, you know, on central control, like we do in the banking system, where it's all digitized and it's a bunch of, you know, ones and zeros on computers that are in memory somewhere. I mean, really, that's what your bank account is. It's just a memory, a computer, you know, and then to digitize it even further, where there's a one-to-one correspondence between those digits and you, then you've got even more control. So I do see, though, that it'll grind to that direction, Kai, and at some point there will be this point of like, oh my God, that's it. I've got to choose. That's going to be tough.
It will be tough, I think. And but I've been listening closely to what you've been saying as well, and you mentioned mostly gold as part of a new monetary system. Like, you haven't mentioned silver yet, and that's why I have to ask, like, how does silver fit into all of it, and will silver be part of it?
Yeah, I don't know. So I would say silver will not be part of it officially. Gold is more likely to be part of it officially. Silver is just too valuable, and I know it's only, you know, less than $20 an ounce, too valuable as far as its uses in industry. So for silver to become a monetary asset, and for the banks to hold it as a monetary asset, I mean, there's just not enough of it. It's so scarce relative to gold. They got to keep gold at a high price. I mean, just do a thought experiment that if silver and gold were par, so an ounce of silver is $1,800 an ounce and an ounce of gold is $1,800 an ounce. Is silver too bulky then? No, it's not. It's basically, it's almost the same volume. Silver is less dense than gold, so it's not quite the same volume, but pretty close. But if silver was $1,800 an ounce, you wouldn't have many people saying it's too bulky. That's for sure. So my point is that silver will be part of the monetary system on the underground economy when you have to sign that paper to stay in their banking system or choose your own, because you've got cryptos that are, let's call them exempt, because they're not in the system. They're pirate coin or Monero or crypto that's backed by gold and silver or what have you. And you feel strongly, not only politically, what you want to remain free, and you don't want to accept their system, then you have to, you know, be able to go that way. And on the other hand, of course, the system will be breaking down at the same time. So as much as, you know, they go into the Baghdad Bob mode, you know, and get more and more time on the television and tell you how things really are, the more you look out your window and say, that's not what I'm seeing at all. You know, you guys don't have control at all. I saw, you know, they burned down our bank or whatever. So very interesting times. But remember, humans have gotten through these type of things in the past. And these cycles repeat. It's just, you know, different as far as what the monetary sphere may look like. Instead of being on a computer, maybe they're, you know, physical pieces of disks in a bank or whatever. But the ideas of going from one extreme to the other, that's been throughout history. So I think we're going to swing back to less and less central control as the system is unable to achieve their goals, even though they pretend as if they've got it all in hand. They don't. In fact, I'll be as bold to Kai as to say that I don't think anyone on the Federal Reserve Board sleeps that well at night. I think they really know. They're becoming more and more powerless, as I said earlier in our conversation. They think that they can control it, but they really can't.
I think whatever they do, it's like they're caught between a rock and a hard place, right? So if they pivot, they get hammered. They keep increasing, they get hammered. I think it's not an easy job, as you said. Maybe closing question, coming back to silver real quick. Silver Symposium happening next week in Spokane, in your hometown. What do you think the theme and like the mood will be at the conference? Like, what do you think is going to be that one buzzword that will that you'll keep hearing throughout the conference?
Frustration. Frustration will be the theme. I mean, it's probably not going to have as good a turnout as last year, which last year's turnout I'm pretty pleased with. A lot of companies are supportive, which I'm grateful for. And it's just very frustrating if you know anything about monetary history and how valuable silver is in, not in the monetary realm, obviously, but in the industrial realm. I mean, you know, we couldn't have the life we have without silver. I mean, every membrane switch that you touch has silver behind it. Flat screen TVs, microwave ovens, any appliance, all electrical power has silver in there somewhere. All your little doodads that are electronic, like DVD players and CD players and all that. So it's a very essential metal, and it's very irreplaceable in most cases. There's no substitutes for it. And knowing all that, as Johnson said, when we went from, you know, silver coinage in the U.S. to Johnson slugs and continued ever since, you know, silver's too valuable to be running. Yeah. I mean, if you look at silver from a monetary perspective, there's many, many ways to look at it. But if you looked at it as far as let's go back, 50, 60, 70 years, a dollar a day was like a good wage for the average wage earner in America. So that's like 3/4 of an ounce, basically, is a silver dollar. So call it an ounce. So if you've got 300 million, 350 million people in the U.S., and the workforce is like, 40% or something like that. So round it to 150 million. 150 million ounces a day doesn't take you very many days and you deplete the entire silver supply, right? Does it take a week or two? So, you know, that gives you the idea. Gold doesn't actually have as big of a problem because its unit value is 91 times what silver is. So silver is undervalued. Gold's undervalued, and silver's undervalued relative to gold. The problem with silver is the way its highest and best use is money. It's always been that way. If you look at silver back in history, the gold-silver ratio for 4,850 years, the gold-silver ratio never got above 20. And there's a reason for that. For those 4,850 years, they were both money and money alone. There weren't flat screen TVs or smartphones or anything else. Once it became a technological metal and it was demonetized, now it had a different function primarily. And that different function is like, okay, well, it's just a commodity. We need it. And if you convince enough people that's not worth holding as money, it's not a store of value, it's not all the aspects of money, then you can get away with what you're doing. But it doesn't take too many of a percentage of the population to say it is money and treats it as such to turn that whole thing around.
David, can people still register for the conference? Is there still room?
Yes, they can. They certainly can.
Where do they go?
I'll be sending out on my email, but just go type in Silver Symposium 2022. It'll pop right up.
Fantastic. Awesome. David, thank you so much for your time. Really, really enlightening. Really great discussion about the biggest reset, how it will play out, and what your dream scenario is. I got to put in air quotes, like dream scenario just doesn't sound right, but can't come up with a better term. David, thank you so much, and obviously themorganreport.com for more information and for your newsletter.
Thank you so much. Appreciate Fantastic. It, Pat.
Everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the conversation we just had with David Morgan. He is the silver guru. He's the editor and CEO and publisher of The Morgan Report, and if you have any questions, put them in the comments and smash that like button. It really helps with the YouTube algorithm. We really appreciate it, and if you hit that bell icon as well when you subscribe, you'll get notified when we put out more content. And by the way, do me a favor, 86% of you are not subscribed yet, so smash that subscribe button. Really appreciate it, and we'll be back with more content very soon.